Hello and welcome to the Hey Now podcast. This is Kyle Perotti coming to you from beautiful Maggie Valley. We are here for our second episode today, and we have with us Canton Mayor Zeb Smathers and Kevin Sandifer, who owns and operates Bearwaters Brewing. Welcome, guys.
Hey, glad to be here.
All right, so today we are talking about a somewhat serious topic. There was some catastrophic flooding in Canton and the surrounding area that occurred a few months ago. And, you know, this will largely be about Canton's comeback. But before we start, I want to kind of, acknowledge the fact that there's still a lot of people struggling, especially in the Crusoe area to the south and east of Canton. You know, a lot of people there, their lives lost, a lot of property damaged, pets lost, you know, a lot of lives were changed. So we're not overlooking that, but we want to get to talking about the recovery effort and just kind of how Canton is again thriving in the face of adversity. So I guess we can start by talking about the experience of the flood itself. I was working at the local paper at the time, the Mountaineer, and the flooding, I didn't know what to think at first when it was happening kind of during the day. The rain was picking up. I heard on the scanner that there were some people who were having certain issues and the river was coming up, and I didn't think a ton of it until after I came back from a meeting that night and started looking on social media and seeing videos people had been taking. And it was astonishing. I barely slept that night because I knew what I'd be waking up to and what I'd be covering, and covering the damage in the days following. It really was catastrophic. Some of the stories were absolutely horrific. But again, you know, there was, out of that came some of also some of the best stories I've ever heard. So I'm interested first in just asking you guys kind of what your experiences were. So, Zeb, you know, as mayor of Canton, you had experiences dealing with the town end of it, but you also personally had your own experiences the night of the flood. Could you talk about that?
Well, I mean, you nailed it. I mean, the day of the floods, we knew we would be experiencing a lot of heavy water, but until about 3:30 that afternoon. And I, you know, went to court. I don't get paid anything to be mayor, so I can't quit my day job as being an attorney. But I remember driving by different parts of the river, the rec park, the bridges, Bearwaters. And my sister has a home on the river. And I remember seeing, you know, very typical elevated water levels, but didn't think twice. I mean, the rain kept coming, but about 3:30, I started receiving phone calls of retaining walls falling, water out of the banks. And then for the first time started hearing about something was happening in Crusoe. I remember going home, telling my wife, Ashley, I said, I have a bad feeling this is going to be a long night. And I remember going down to, Ronnie Mills's feed and see, which is just, you know, a short, you know, hop and skip from Bearwaters. And the sun was out and the rain had stopped, and the town manager and we figured there's about a window of an hour and a half to see where this thing was going. And at this point, we thought we may have dodged a bullet, because the rumor there was more another part of the storm coming. Well, that actually never happened. What happened, though, was somewhere up at in the Crusoe area, there was we all have our theories and rumors of exactly what led to it, but truly a wall of water started forming up at Crusoe, and it started coming down towards Canton, and we started hearing these horrible reports in Crusoe of what was happening. And I remember standing outside with Ronnie Mills and his family and watching it to this day, almost supernatural, where how fast the water started coming up quickly and reaching around. And I called my sister. I won't use the words, and this is a kid-friendly show, but I said, you need to get out now. And she said, look, the water's just barely out of the river. The sun's out. I said, no, something is happening in Crusoe. By the time I went to her house and came back, we have an alderman, Ralph Hamlet, who lives by the river, whose house flooded in 04.
Right.
And I actually was heading back to town, and I called Ralph. I said, are you out? And this, you know, similar discussions to Anna. No, we're going to be fine. We're going to be fine. I said, Ralph, something is happening. You need to get out. By the time I got, I said, I'm going to come pick you up. Let's get you out of here. By the time I got to Ralph's house, the water was already at the door for him and a neighbor. And truly myself and some others, we just jumped in. I think Ralph's tells a little more dramatic telling of this. But we got Ralph out, and his neighbor, I remember pounding on her door. She had just moved in 2 days before, and she came down from her attic, and she didn't want to leave because she's afraid of her cats. And again, I won't use the language. I said, forget the cats. You have to go. And she jumped on my back. We went into the water and got her out. And because this water just came up out of nowhere because this wave started to come. And I think one thing, a lot of times we get the conversation, it was this worse in 04. And I think, yes, only because we lost six lives compared right. to one in 04. The intensity, the amount of, not just the amount of water, but how, you know, quickly, how intense. I mean, like even Ralph's house. Ralph's house was flooded in 04. This time it was truly moved off the foundation, where I don't think Ralph actually will be able to keep his home. Yeah. I wish we had, in a typical situation, hurricanes, we expect flooding. We have days to repair. We could have sandbagged. We truly had hours. And at that point, it was like how quickly it came, and then it was over. I remember about 12:30 that night being on the bridge, you know, near Bear Waters, and the stars were out. Like, so in a matter of hours, we just had this demonic flash flood coming off the remnants of a tropical storm. Yeah. Kevin will speak more to it about, you know, but it was just how quickly life can change. And I've said it once, and I'll say it again. I've witnessed this in my own personal life. You better enjoy every single day, every ray of sunlight, because how quickly things can change. And there's families up in Crusoe, whether they lost home, I mean, loved ones, or lost their homes, they truly went to work that day and came home and their house and their life were completely changed forever. And none of us were expecting what happened that Tuesday in August.
Yeah, it was crazy. I mean, again, you know, when that happened, I was with the newspaper. I had the chance to interview some folks who, you know, had similar experiences, people who had rescued other loved ones. I talked to a guy who, Ben Wilson out in Crusoe, who got one of his chickens, climbed a tree and just hung on for dear life. And the stories are, I mean, they're harrowing. And Kevin, seeing what happened at Bear Waters, I know that basement area that you guys have in the brewery, I know it's flooded somewhat before, and I know you keep a lot of equipment and kegs down there and stuff. But I saw videos that you posted of you guys down there scrambling, and it was terrifying, because not only were you losing your property, but you must have felt at a time like this is getting dangerous being down there, right?
Yeah, I think for us it was, you know, one of those situations where you in one moment you feel like you kind of have things sort of under control, and you're like, hey, this is bad, but we've got a plan. We've had some close calls with the water there in the past. So we have some equipment protocols. We had some pumps down there. When I knew we were, you know, kind of in trouble was in the past when that stuff has happened. The fire department, which is right across the street from us, has been great. And they, you know, bring over a gas pump and they'll kind of hook up that sump pump and start pumping water out for us and help us kind of get over, you know, that part of it until we get it under control. And we called over there, and of course I talked to Chief, and he's like, man, I can't help you today. He said, I'm over at Meadowbrook. Meadowbrook's flooding over here. And so I'm working at the school, and he said, you're on your own. And when I heard that, I was like, well, that's the first time that's ever happened. So
right.
That was the first red flag, like something bigger might be happening. And so we started sandbagging. We started hooking up our own pumps. We actually converted several of the brewery pumps that we have that we use to transfer beer into makeshift sump pumps. So in one video I have, you know, you see us actually taking the brewery hoses, which are like fire hoses.
I saw that, yeah.
And we hooked them up to the pumps, and we were using those to pump water out of the basement. But that was all still while the river was sort of, you know, still in check. It wasn't really out of the banks that much yet, and things were still, you know, we had some hope. But in a matter of minutes, it was like a switch was flipped. And so all of a sudden, you know, the river's out of the banks. It starts coming like a tidal wave into the basement area. And at that point, I mean, we have, you know, equipment hooked up to three-phase power and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'm, you know, immediately going into emergency management mode, going, well, we've got power sources down here. Our employees could get shocked or electrocuted. Right. You know, there's real hazards now. So we started systematically shutting power systems down on the lower level. And I think, you know, to your point, your question, the one moment that it really hit me, because you're in reactionary mode when you have a crisis developing. And I think, you know, you're former Navy. So we both went through damage control training, you know, where you're in a flooded space and you're trying to shore up bulkheads and stuff in basic training. And you know, you're learning how to deal with those pressures. It felt a lot like that as the water's coming in and I'm in that space and then the lights are going out and I'm going, well, man, this is crazy. And my son, who is, you know, 22 years old, was there trying to help us. And he was up at the top of the property watching the water pour into the basement while I'm in the bottom level trying to secure things. And he's screaming at me, "Dad, get out of there." It was already up to my waist.
Yeah.
And I realized, I was like, I'm in a flooded space, you know, compartment, and this is going to completely submerge. I got to get out. So I waded out of there as quickly as I could, to get free of the space and tried to secure. We had all of about maybe 10 minutes to react to get sensitive computer equipment and things like we have down there that run certain things to higher ground, which we did. But, you know, I tried to secure the equipment in the space as best I could, you know, knowing that it was going to flood, and then made my way out of the structure. The next thing that was crazy then was turning your attention to the parking lot where we had our vehicles and realizing within a matter of minutes, the water was almost up to the doors on the trucks.
Right.
And we got to get these trucks out of here.
Yeah.
And so we started evacuating the vehicles and moving them further, you know, west out of the parking lot up towards Kobe to higher ground, thinking, okay, let's just get them there for now. But even with that, within 15 minutes of moving the vehicles, they were back underwater again. We're moving them again up to the Advanced Auto Parts. So it was just that quick how fast that area just completely submerged.
Yeah, it was crazy after, you know, again, the day after when I was kind of in the area, seeing there were vehicles, you know, up in trees, there were vehicles on their roof that were, you know, nowhere near where the river had already receded after a day. And you see just the kind of the scope of devastation. And what amazed me, you know, kind of shifting to, I guess if you can take a positive away, this is it, is the recovery. With Bear Waters in particular, I know you guys were saying, you know, you wanted to open early October. And I was like, you know, I saw it a couple of days after and there was mud on the floor. And I was like, there's just absolutely no way it's going to happen. You know, I was as skeptical as probably anyone else. But, you know, sure enough, you guys, you know, and you had a video. It was funny. You guys had a video on your Facebook page of, you know, kind of an inspirational video. The first minute was the flooding. And it was a lot of that video I was talking about where it's, you know, kind of scary. And then you guys released the Oktoberfest. And there's a scene in that video where there's two mugs clinking together and it's, you know, it's a good hearty toast. And it's kind of just like, it was, you know, like that moment, like the GIF with the little girl at the Mariners game eating the cotton candy, who's just out of her mind excited. So how'd it feel to get back up on your feet and how'd you go about doing that?
Wow. So yeah, there's a whole range of emotions that go with this. I mean, obviously, you know, for me, and I've said this before in other interviews is, you know, I remember, you know, making my way out to past the Kobe parking lot. And I was out there with some of the fire department guys. And then Steve and a couple of the other officers were there. And we were just kind of watching, you know, the whole downtown area, you know, flooding. And my first question immediately to those guys was, does anybody know when this crest is supposed to happen? And originally it was like 9 o'clock, you know, everybody's thinking 9 o'clock is the crest. So I said, I'm going to stay all the way to the crest. And at 9 o'clock, the water's still coming up and I'm going, it's not cresting, you know, and it was starting to drizzle a little bit at that point. And it was, you know, a little bit chilly and everybody was wet and soaking wet. And I just remember at that point, I remember going, you know, there's no point in me sitting here anymore and just watching the water pass by the buildings and, you know, in the pitch black. I said, I might as well just, you know, go to the house and try to get a little bit of sleep. And I know what I'm going to be dealing with in the morning. So went home that night and I actually, you know, got a shower and cleaned up and I sat in my chair at home and I fell asleep in the chair. And, you know, I think I woke up about 3 o'clock, put the police scanner on to see if I could see if anything was going on, any updates, and really wasn't much going on there. And then so, you know, fell back asleep. And next thing I know, my wife was kind of shaking me. She's like, Art's on the phone. He's my business partner. And she's like, he's already at the building. And I was like, what time is it? She's like, it's, you know, 8 o'clock. And I was like, I got to get going. And I called him back and I said, what, you know, what's up? And he said, I don't even know how to describe what I'm looking at. You know, I could hear it in his voice, this like devastation. And so, you know, and I've been there before because, you know, I was in Homestead Air Force Base when Andrew hit the hurricane, hit the base. And I was there for that. And then I stayed 6 months after to help clean the base up. But, you know, when you go through a natural disaster, that first shock of seeing the devastation of what nature can do is overwhelming. But then you start to realize you've got to start making progress. So he said, I don't even know where to begin. And I said, just start moving stuff. That's the first step. Just start moving things. Let's get things out of the building. We're going to empty the building. That's the first thing. And so he said, all right. And I said, I'll be there soon. So we got there. So we go from this whole recovery process of realizing we've got to empty the entire structure out that's just full of mud and debris and you know, assess damages and restore critical systems. But what was even more amazing about that is I got there and there was probably already 30 people there that I didn't even know.
Right.
That are shoveling my building out. And I'm like, who are these people? And they're like, they're volunteers. They just showed up. I think the folks down at Southern Porch were the first people on the scene. Michelle and those guys over there from Southern Porch they had their whole staff down there cleaning our building at 8:30, 9 o'clock in the morning. And I was like, this is unbelievable. And it just kept coming. So to really, you know, see the community rally around you and start pitching in without asking any questions. There wasn't any, you know, pre-qualifiers. It wasn't, you know, what is your intention? What's your motivation for this? It was just everybody just joined together and started just going. So,
right.
It was really amazing to see that. So,
and that speaks to something else I wanted to ask Zeb about. You know, you're the mayor of the town that has probably the most resilient community I've ever seen. It was like just a matter of willpower. Like the town of Canton kind of looked at this situation that was, dire from the beginning. The town was really pretty wrecked. And it was like they looked at it and just said, we're going to will our way through this. And that's pretty much what's happened. Is that kind of how you feel?
You know, being a blue collar, one of the few last blue collar towns, not just in the West, but in North Carolina. It's something that is part of our DNA. We have been counted out so many times. If the mill opened up 100 some years ago on a Tuesday, there was rumors of it closing on a Wednesday. Right. That we've always felt economic pressure and that of the good old days are behind us and it's the interstate or it's education or it's the environment or it's economic downturns. We're still here. And I think that's just something that, like you said, I think it's you wheel yourself into it. But it's not easy, and it doesn't just happen. If you listen to what Kevin said, and for your listeners out here, I think a lot of people can take a lot of inspiration. Can take a lot of inspiration from Kevin and Art and Bear Waters and our businesses and the other people, you know, suffering. So many, after witnessing firsthand their business, they've sacrificed in, they've put money towards, again, put sacrifices towards.
Right.
And this happens. There are many people, and I'm not to judge them. They say, we're done. They don't go the next morning. They don't make phone calls. The community doesn't respond. To have the audacity to believe in yourself and your community that you will take those next step forwards and say, just go move the stuff.
Right.
That almost nanosecond of a decision is what separates, you know, to me, your leaders, the ones that have that grit.
Right.
Because, and I don't, I'm not, I mean, I don't look down upon anyone that say, whoa, this is, we're done.
Right.
You know, but in those moments when you make the decision to stay and fight back, you've taken your first steps into courage, into resiliency, into building back.
Right.
And then people, you know, respond to that. And so as much as Kevin and Art says the community responded to them, that's having Bear Waters open back up and all of our other businesses, it gives us inspiration for all of us in this. I mean, there were days, especially that evening. I remember walking back, looking at the stars, and I'd parked at the First Baptist Church. And, you know, there were moments, I'm a man of faith and I'm a Christian and I say that, but I think there's times it's okay to question and be angry at God. And I think anyone went through this and we have been given a really bad hand at times, but to have that resiliency to pick yourself up, it not only we get inspiration from the community, I think the community takes inspiration like people like Art and Kevin, because we need stories of people fighting back. America loves a comeback story. Every one of us have been down. The easy thing is to tuck your head and run and call it a day. And
Right. Maybe
like making an excuse, a reality. No one would have looked down on anyone to say, nah, sorry, this I don't like my hand. I'm out. I'm cashing out. But we need stories like Bear Waters to give all of us inspiration, especially small businesses, to say, we're not going anywhere. We believe in each other. We believe in our product. We believe in our community.
Yeah.
We need dramatic examples, especially in these times, to keep us going no matter what field you're in. And Bear Waters and businesses like them are the perfect example. And it just people responded. And so the grit, it doesn't just happen. It has to come from something deeper. But I think it really comes from the initial steps of not calling it a day and just keep going.
Right, right. And it's funny. It kind of reminds me of this is not going to be the first time I reference Tombstone in this podcast, probably. But it almost reminds me of in the movie Tombstone, when Wyatt Earp, you know, there is Wyatt and Doc and the Earp brothers, and they're on the banks of the river, and there's the cowboys who are the bad guy in this Western across the river. And Wyatt's just like, nope. And he walks into the river, you know, taking fire, but he just, you know, it was that resilience. Like, he just wasn't going to stop. He wasn't going to let that beat him. And he went out there and kind of won. And it was this weird moment where, you know, Doc Holliday, someone asked him where Wyatt went. He's like, oh, he's over there walking on water. And that's kind of what it reminds me of, is like that resilience of just saying, you know, this is a terrible situation, but it's just not going to beat me. Again, I'm going to will my way to coming out of this thing on top. And that's, well,
yeah. And I've told people ask me personally, I said, well, Zeb, how are you doing? I mean, how are you making it through? And trust me, if I knew standing still and shouting at the sky or my fist would change anything and build back my city and my friends, you know, homes, and I'd do it. But standing still, being angry, making excuses, that doesn't solve anything. There's only one, life only moves in one direction forward.
Right.
And I think, so therefore, why not embrace that? You know, why not just go, hey, let's go. Let's go across the river and see where it goes. But, it's a lot easier to look back now in November on August and tell these stories, because they're for all of us. Those 24, 48 hours, even as mayor, I remember talking to the paper mill, the Evergreen Packaging. Right. In a matter of an hour, I was worried about the mill being completely offline, which treats our wastewater.
Yep.
So I'm thinking of, as a mayor, I'm thinking of a cataclysmic situation where we can't treat people's wastewater. I've gotten calls from law enforcement of possible 60 or more dead in Crusoe.
Right.
So we're thinking of a national tragedy, a national worldwide tragedy of 60 people lost.
Right.
And it turned out to be six. However, that's six too many.
Right.
I think for all of us looking back now, we can sort of in our head put all this together. But in those 48 hours, there was a pit in our stomach. But slowly, yeah. It was the moments finally saying, all right, let's go. Which has really provided an almost therapeutic. All right, we've taken stock. This is a situation, but we're going to fight our way back again, and that's what pushed us.
Right, and Zeb, also, it's, you know, the community rallied, and the recovery that's happened up to this point couldn't have occurred without the community rallying. But also, there was a lot of outside interest and help. You know, there were certain things that I think people were upset didn't happen as fast as they could have. And I promised my boss, Lynn, the director here, that I wouldn't get too political. So you'll have to navigate that minefield. But could you talk a little bit about just kind of the process of, you know, our Governor Roy Cooper visited, Senator Tom Tillis, just kind of dealing with some of those bigger level politicians and, you know, some of those conversations?
You know, I remember reaching out, you know, again, my father was mayor in 2004 when those floods hit. And so there was a little bit of knowledge from there. And luckily for the town of Canton staff, we had a lot of our workers, our employees that were around for 2004. So right. I knew initially that that evening I was in talks with the governor's office, Senator Burr's office, Senator Tillis's office immediately saying, we have ourselves a problem. If you think this is just a little flash flood, this is a major, major economic situation we have. But in time, I've said many, many times before, it's tragic. It takes a tragedy to bring us together. Right. And I remember a conversation interview out of a Raleigh newspaper television asked me, so how's this change you as mayor? And I said, to be honest with you, I couldn't stand the toxicity existing in our political discourse before the floods.
Right.
But once you witness Democrats and Republicans coming together who may have tremendous disagreements on certain issues, come together for the benefit of the people and put that to a side. Once you witness pure leadership without the political back and forth, and it goes to actually help people and can produce results, you can't really go back to the way it was.
Right.
And you have to demand better. And again, I met with Democrats, Republicans, Senator Tillis several times, Governor Cooper, Speaker of the House Tim Moore, our local delegation. We're talking Democrats and Republicans, and they would walk in about always taken by Bear Waters, because not just to see Kevin and Art, but the volunteers out there.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Governor Cooper held his press conference from Bear Waters, a place I was having a beer just a few weeks before. I mean, there were several moments as I sort of sat back and I'm thinking, is this really happening? I mean, to see the governor of North Carolina sitting in Bear Waters holding a major national conference.
Yeah, standing in the muck with the press around them. And
you know, it's one of those just moments. But, you know, watching people come together, we have to demand better. And when you see people in the community pull together, you know, we don't have to accept a permanent time of just discourse and division. And when you see the real thing, you know it exists. And so the ones out there that purposely try to take advantage or divide us, they need to be called out. Because guess what? The people suffering, you know, you learn this in local government, you learn it in the military. You don't have time to, you know, when your house is burning down or flooded, and you don't care if you're a Democrat or Republican, you got to solve the problem. When you're a small business, you don't have time to play that game.
Right.
And so that's very disrespectful for me in politics. You got to provide straight answers and get the job done, get the help that you need and cut through that. The people that got hurt by the floods deserve better than just your political back and forth.
Right. You know, with this podcast, this particular episode, I want to really highlight that Canton is back open. And again, you know, that doesn't discount the struggles that continue, especially in the Crusoe area. But, you know, Canton is back open, and Canton has a number of tremendous businesses, you know, beyond Bear Waters. There are restaurants, you know, one of the best coffee shops in the county. You know, I'm kind of partial to the video game store. There's all kinds of businesses, and they really are back open. So, you know, I guess I would ask Kevin this, you know, looking back at when the flooding happened and seeing Governor Cooper again standing in the muck with national press all around him, kind of parachuting in and getting before they head off to their next assignment. And it was surreal. And then just a couple of weeks ago, I was back in Bear Waters for a lunch meeting, and it honestly looked like nothing had ever happened. You know, just how does it, I guess the question would be, how does it feel, Kevin, to be back open, to be back operational, to be serving people again?
I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, you know, when we were down for 6 weeks, which seemed like an eternity, but in comparison to some of the other businesses that are still going through recovery, I mean, we were very fortunate to turn it around in 6 weeks. And, you know, again, that was a big part of the community stepping up and stepping in, and a lot of blessings of things we dodged bullets on. For instance, I mean, we had to move a panel box out of the lower level to be compliant now with the flood code situation. And, you know, we use a local electrician, Tim Massey, who's, you know, his son and my son went to Haywood Christian Academy together. And so that's how we have that relationship. And I called Tim, and he jumped over there to help us get the power working. And, you know, Tim's like, hey, I can't find a panel box anywhere in the country right now. I mean, there's just none to be had, because we got supply chain issues that we're dealing with in addition to the flood situation, right? So that complicates the recovery. As a matter of fact, we still got a couple of pieces of key pieces of equipment that we're limping along that are kind of Frankenstein together right now, because we're waiting for PLC controllers and things that are sitting on ships off of California right now to get those fully back online. Right. But I mean, you know, Tim's like, I don't know if I can make this happen. You know, I can't find a replacement box. And he goes back to his shop and digs around, and lo and behold, he had one buried in a pile of stuff. And he's like, I probably got the last panel box, you know, in the United States right here. And I was like, please don't sell it on eBay.
Yeah, so you can auction it off.
And, you know, so Tim, you know, just turned out, happened to have this panel box. And, you know, if it wasn't for that, we wouldn't have been able to complete the process. But, you know, more so back to your question, I mean, as you're going through this recovery process over a 6-week period, the thing you notice the most is, you know, that building is a living, breathing space, you know, right. And it has people in it all the time that are enjoying each other's company. They're interacting with our staff. Our staff is like our family. So seeing them every day and, you know, hearing their stories about their kids and, you know, they're all family people. So, you know, you get to know all the intimate details about what's going on with their kids and how they're playing football and they're, you know, in baseball, they're doing all these great things. And, you know, it's to have that just go away overnight is like, you know, it's really, in a way, it's just a little traumatic because then you know, the building is dead and the space is dead. And you're thinking, holy cow, you know, I just miss the normal activity, just seeing that ebb and flow of people coming in and having those conversations. And of course, you know, breweries are like, you know, public houses or community centers in a lot of ways, just because the nature of the business, and people like to come and congregate and share a meal, share some drinks and some stories. And so, you know, not having that for a while, it was really hard to see, you know, the building not have that kind of activity.
Right.
And so when we finally got it back to where we could reopen, we welcomed the first customers. And I mean, there were people, we were going to open at 4 o'clock on that Friday, and there were people showing up at 2 o'clock waiting to get back in. Like, I want to be the first one, you know? And so that was really exciting to see that. And just to have them back has been really neat, just to have that, you know, space come alive again. And we tried to do some things a little bit better on, you know, with the rebuild. We changed some color schemes. We added some features to the building to help, you know, make it more inviting. So, you know, we tried to use the opportunity as well to, you know, make some changes that we wanted to do.
Right. And you guys also, you know, kind of an advantage for you guys is you have your Maggie Valley location, which is just down the road from here at the office where I'm at now.
Yep.
Also just down the road from my house. So I like it because anytime I have people in town, we go down and get a few beers. I'd imagine that probably helped a lot. I don't know if buffer is the right word, but, you know, it gave you another place to serve your beer, you know, another source of income. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, it served a lot of different purposes for us during the shutdown. And Canton obviously, you know, gave us a place to rotate a lot of our staff through. So only a few had to go on unemployment. So it was, that was great. The ones that could commute to Maggie, we tried to rotate them into the schedule over there. So they were staying active on payroll. And then, you know, it was a place for people to come show support too. So we had a lot of people trying to drop donations and gifts off at the Maggie location while Canton was shut down. And then, you know, like you said, on top of that, you had a revenue source. But I think, you know, we can all agree that the parent location of the brewery in Canton is completely different from the Maggie location. Maggie has more of a restaurant centric right. feel to it. Whereas, as you know, the main brewing equipment and the production really happens in Canton. And so,
yeah, that place always, sorry to interrupt you. I just have to say that place smells phenomenal. If you go in there on the right day when you're brewing.
Yeah. And that's the part that's missing in Maggie. So it's, while it's great to have it, it's not the same soul. It's not the same environment. And I think, you know, we'll always have that connection with the town of Canton, of that being our home base and our mothership, where everything really, you know, the core operations take place. And so, you know, it was really fortunate to have Maggie, because it did help carry us through a lot of what we were trying to do while we were, you know, having to do our recovery. And so, yeah, without it, I think we would have been in a lot worse shape overall as a company. So,
yeah. And Zeb, you know, another thing I wanted to ask about, you know, you can't really talk about Canton recovering from the flooding without talking about kind of that resilience again, that's played out over, you know, I've lived in this area about 5 years. And when I came here, Canton was, the downtown, you know, a lot of, empty storefronts, not a lot of foot traffic, not a lot of vehicle traffic. You know, people just thought of the paper mill. And over the last few years, you start seeing all these businesses moving in again, you know, mentioned the coffee shop, and that right there shows resilience, you know, staying strong and keeping those businesses for the most part during COVID again shows that strength. And you've been mayor for, you know, the majority of that time. So I guess for you, it probably didn't come as much of a surprise that Canton would recover the way it has from the flooding. And, you know, maybe you've already answered it, but, you know, how have you seen that resilience play out in the past? And, you know, how do you think it maybe affected the way that Canton overcame the flood?
Well, I mean, I think it's clear for anyone that knows Canton and Haywood County that we love our football and in Haywood County. And I think it's, you know, starting in 2013, I mean, like any good program, you have to learn how to win again. And I think the first steps in Canton, almost on, looking back almost a decade ago, you have to establish the belief that you can win. And I think you buy into something a lot of times where it's like, well, our best days are behind us. We can't do this. It is, it's corny as it can be, and I don't try to use it as much, but why not put it on a, you know, widely listened to podcast?
I've already put a tombstone.
Well, for decades. I mean, I remember, I'm 39 years old, and I was born in 82, and I can remember the last part of when Canton had a downtown, and it was busy. And that was in the mid-80s.
Wow.
For many, many years after that, you could look at the word Canton, and you could see it as Cant. And I think we, in the last several years, we turned it to Can. And I think once you, that's the first steps. Once you believe in yourself, believe in your product, believe in your businesses, believe in your community, and you get people doing that, then you can go to that.
Right.
And to keep with the football, you know, mentality, when Bearwaters opened up, was that 17?
17.
17.
Yep.
That was a huge first and 10 for us. I mean, look, you can't really call yourself a good home, a good small town anywhere in the United States at this point unless you have a brewery.
Right.
I mean, you just don't. You have to have a brewery these days for a lot of good reasons. For us to get Bearwaters, that was huge for us.
Yeah.
And then I feel in the floods, we got knocked back. And when they reopened, that was the first sign of relief. And look, you got a lot of other businesses that were not affected by the floods. They're still finding their way up, you know, open. Each one is just as powerful as a story and just as important. But I think for people, to Kevin's point, Bearwaters means something more to us. It's more than just a brewery. It has this energy. It has this belief. We love showing it off. We love watching people all across the United States and even the world come to Canton to get, you know, great beer, but also fellowship. And because one importance in our businesses, in our town, and especially at Bearwaters, what you see is what you get. Yes, there's marketing and packaging and all that. But I think you find this in Haywood County. I think that's how people are drawn to us, especially tourists. What you see is what you get. In such a superficial world that, you know, that can be so prepackaged and plastic, when you come across real people, real towns, real businesses, they are what they are, they pride themselves on their product, and they stand by that, you're drawn to that.
Yeah.
And I think there's such a premium in this superficial world to be who you are and reflective in your business. And I think any of the businesses or restaurants in Canton, whether you're an auto mechanics or a restaurant or a brewery or whatever you are, the only way to be successful is to be who you are.
Right.
And I think that's what sort of carried us through. And I remember in 2013, downtown, we had probably a 20% occupancy. I mean, we are now up in the 80s. We're not there yet. We've got a long way to go. But we've been able to bring in new idea, new people, new money. But we haven't changed who we are. We're still a blue-collar town.
Right.
And as I like to say, the paper mill, our public schools, especially Pisgah, and our people keep us Canton. So we're able to bring in and have great things like coffee and breweries and craft stores. But we pride ourselves on being different. And right. I think people are drawn to that. Because there's so much copycats and all that. And I think we'll continue to do that, and that'll get us to the floods. But to your point, Canton is open. We still have some businesses down. We've got still a lot of recovery. Yep. I still don't have a town hall or a police department or a fire department.
And it might be years until you guys get those back.
It may be. But we'll make that through. But there's so many other businesses. And if you're listening to this, whether you're in Haywood, especially if you're in Haywood County, but anywhere, especially in these days, and Kevin spoke to it, supply chain issues and coming out of COVID, this holiday season, say you're going to spend X amount of money in a place like Canton to support local businesses. Yep. Go ahead and say, we're going to do this, because it is such a testament to the sacrifice and tenacity of people like Kevin and Art and Bearwaters and their employees, especially coming back for something like this. The very least we can do is support them by getting a beer, buying a T-shirt, something.
Right.
Because there's so many small businesses, just like North Carolina, you know, there's more Cantons in the state than Charlotte's. I mean, yeah. I know where the money and the people are, but there's so many more places like Kevin and small businesses than the big boys.
Right.
But the holiday season, you have to lean in and say, I'm going to go out of the way to support them. And yeah. we need people, especially this Christmas season, to support the businesses of Canton, whether they're affected by the floods or not, because no matter who you were, somehow, some way, you were affected by the floods.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, a business like Kevin's, like Bearwater, is one of those things where obviously visitors are going to like it. It's a place to sit down, have a good local, unique beer you haven't had before. But I also feel like, you know, it's a good sailor reference for you is, you know, it's kind of like when you're out at sea and you see a sparrow, it means land is near. And it means, you know, so Bearwater's opening is kind of like seeing that sparrow, and you know that, you know, you're coming to shore, you know, you're coming on better times. So it's kind of the first step in that direction. And I think a lot of people realize that. And it was almost like comforting for people just to see Bearwater's opening, even if you don't drink beer, you know? And I think that was spectacular. The last thing I wanted to ask about is for you, Zeb. Another thing that kind of shows that Canton is moving in that direction of opening back up, becoming more vibrant, is Chestnut Mountain, which is, I believe, is it 450 acres?
It is.
And about 450 acres, and it's going to have, you know, trails, backcountry camping opportunities, all kinds of stuff, including a mountain biking, I guess, multiple runs. Mm-hmm. I know your town manager, Nick, if I get his name right, sure.
He's been called worse, but that's fine.
Yeah. But I know I was surprised to learn he's actually a mountain biker. So I think that's pretty cool. And I plan on having him on to talk about Chestnut Mountain a little bit in a little bit more detail. But, you know, just could you kind of tease it for people a little bit, what they can expect from that and, you know, the kind of draw that you think it'll be?
You know, I think it's a game changer. And a lot of times politicians use that word. But no, this truly is a game changer. I mean, North Carolina, I mean, it's now its own. I think Governor Cooper has made its own sort of department. Outdoor recreation is an absolute, and tourism is an absolutely multi-million dollar business, which is growing exponentially across the state.
Right. Well, and look where we live.
You know? Yeah, exactly. And it's, again, it goes with what I said. It's a type of economic driver, which is built around what God has provided you. You know, it really is. It's part of who you are. You don't have to manufacture it. It's already here. So what Chestnut Mountain is 450 acres located just outside of our city limits, which was deeded to us with the purchase of the Southern Highlands Conservancy. It preserved these acreage. This is a major wildlife corridor. It also sits between Haywood and Buncombe County. You know, being this close to being 20 minutes away from Asheville, which is booming in its own right, it's going to be an outdoor recreation park. It's going to sit right outside of Canton. I'd be very honest, I don't know a thing about mountain biking, but I do know something about economics and eating and drinking, to the two things I enjoy doing. You're going to draw a lot of people into this beautiful, beautiful area. Beautiful, just, you know, place to do biking and hiking, and when they're done and they want a beer, they're gonna go to Bearwater's. You know, they're gonna go to our shops. That's the purpose of this. I mean, it is to get people there for the overall experience of this. And this sits on the border of Haywood and Buncombe County. You cannot get any place west of Buncombe County, west of Asheville, without passing through Canton somehow, some way, either on the interstate or through 1923, which is where this park is located, which goes into our downtown corridor. One of my favorite quotes is by Walt Disney: if you want to control the experience, control the entrance.
Right.
And so us putting this outdoor recreation park on our entrance, in the entrance of the greater Smoky Mountains, whether you're going to Waynesville, Cullowhee, Silva, Cherokee, Murphy, Western Carolina University, you have to come through us. And so if we can get people here to experience our mountains, go biking, enjoy our outdoors, but also get them to Bearwater's, get them to the Southern Porch, get them to J-Row's, whatever it may be, then that's going to be a huge economic driver for us. But it also, it is the best use of land, because this came very quickly. This could have been a rock quarry. It could have been all sorts of things, much, much different. And so we've preserved it. We're going to benefit from it. And again, it diversifies our economy. So for us to be in outdoor tourism, outdoor recreation, we can provide blue collar jobs. We have service jobs. We have now outdoor recreation. And I think COVID, the importance is you need a diverse economy. So when one part goes down because of either a pandemic or floods, you can strengthen the other side of it. I'm a big believer for America to work, you still have to make things and produce things. And I think we do that in Canton.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think that sounds exciting. I think this has been a good episode. You guys are a good follow-up to the boys from Balsam Range. They set the bar pretty high in that first episode, and I think you guys are keeping it going. So next episode's guests are going to, again, they're going to have to bring their A game. Zeb, Kevin, thank you for your time.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Kyle. Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to our second ever episode of the Hey Now podcast brought to you by Visit NC Smokies. Again, I am Kyle Perotti, and we'd like to say thank you to our guests, Zeb Smathers and Kevin Sandifer. If you haven't had a chance yet, please go back and listen to our first episode featuring Tim Surratt and Darren Nicholson of Balsam Range. They were entertaining guests, to say the least. And if you haven't had the chance yet, please also subscribe and follow the podcast. Until next time.